We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Tuesday to you. And it is a Tuesday, December 3rd edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, kicking off live and direct on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next 2 hours, we've got some great guests for you, a lot of great topics. We'll take you all around the NFL, college football, as we've got playoff rankings dropping after our show this afternoon. But we've got to start with LSU and UL. Yesterday was all about reacting to what just happened and how the regular season finished. Tigers, of course, 12-0, depending on where you look, the number one, number two team in the country heading to play the Georgia Bulldogs in Atlanta. UL, 10-2. Historical regular season for Billy Napier and the Cajuns, and they're heading to play, again, for the second straight December in Boone, North Carolina, for the second ever Sun Belt Conference title game. So while yesterday was kind of getting your bearings, right, what happened, today is all about what comes next. And let's look at that for both of these programs. I'll start with LSU. And for the Tigers, I mentioned, it's a ball game against Georgia. You go in as touchdown favorites. Georgia comes at you with maybe the best defense that you've seen all year, I would say with the exception of Auburn. I still look at 3-5 up front on that defensive line for the War Eagle / Tigers / Plainsmen, and they're devastating. Georgia, however, likely better in their back seven. And so this will present challenge, no question, for Joe Burrow and for Brady and Ensminger that are pulling the strings on this LSU offense. And so what comes immediately next is a ball game that I do feel like is in your best interest if you win. However, I'll continue to say I'm not sure it's a 100% prerequisite for LSU to get into the college football playoffs. In fact, I'll put a percentage on that bad boy for you. I'm feeling good like that. First Tuesday in December, LSU right now, after Georgia, is looking at either a playoff semi destination that would be back in the desert where LSU went bowling this past season in the Fiesta Bowl, or staying in Atlanta and playing in the Chick-fil-A Bowl. Those are your two national semifinals this year. They're both on Saturday, December the 28th. I'm going to tell you right now that there is a 10% chance. That's where I'm at with this thing. If LSU is to lose to Georgia, I would leave about a 10% chance that somehow, some way, the Tigers get leapfrogged, don't finish in the Final Four, and they're playing in the Sugar Bowl instead. But again, that 90% that encompasses LSU winning this game, and I do think a good chance that even if they lose, that's where I'm at with it. And I think it's realistic. I think they'll be number two tonight after the college football playoff rankings are dispersed. It'll provide good motivation. And I expect LSU to come out motivated. I think they're going to look to prove a point. And right now, my early feelings of this week, I've got the Tigers with a double-digit win over the Georgia Bulldogs in Atlanta. And from there, again, you've got a chance to get up to that number one spot. Why is that important? You've got an opportunity to choose where you want to play this football game. You've got an opportunity to steer a little bit where you're going to play. For example, number four, Oklahoma, number four, Utah. That, I think, would be a huge feather in Ed Orgeron and the Tigers' cap. So when you start to look at what's next for LSU, there you have it. As far as what's next for UL, well, we know that it's a place the Cajuns have been bordering on three times now within the span of about 14 months. Boone, North Carolina. And the Cajuns played pretty well there during the regular season last year. They played very well there early December in the first ever Sun Belt Conference title championship game last year. And then probably the closest of them all was this year here at Cajun Field. And so if you look at the progression, I think that Napier is slowly but surely beginning to figure out the best ways to beat this App State team. The other thing that's happening, and it's not been slowly, but it's for damn sure been, you know, surely that part of it, the defense keeps getting better and better. You could argue by leaps and bounds. I mean, that was a game inside of Cajun Field a month and a half ago that was played almost a single digits for the majority of the contest. So this Cajun's defense under Ron Roberts really has not only turned a corner, they've become an absolute cornerstone of this team and this program. But like LSU, let's forecast what could be coming next for the Raging Cajuns. Right now, the mothership and their fearless bowl projections giving two possible destinations, and I think that this is pretty much on point. It's either going to be the NOLA Bowl, Saturday, December the 21st. Clint, how about this? A 9 p.m. kickoff. That ball game always sways what time it starts, right? It's been early in the day before. It's been at night, and this would be a late-night special adjacent to Bourbon Street. UL versus Marshall would be one of the potential outcomes. Now, where else could the Cajuns land? Again, this will all depend on whether or not they could beat a top 25 App State Mountaineers team this weekend. The other opportunity is the Lending Tree Bowl in Mobile. What's interesting about that one, CD, that's the final bowl game and the last bowl game before the national championship. It'll be played on Monday, January the 6th, 7:30 p.m. The projection there from one of the ESPN analysts, Central Michigan versus UL. So pretty reasonable road trips, no matter which way it falls. And you've got a real opportunity, especially if it's January 6th, to, I mean, corner the market, because you're not going to have Monday Night Football. You're in the NFL playoffs at that point. You would have an opportunity to be the last game before the national championship. So there really isn't a way that this thing can end poorly for this celebrated 2019 season for UL.
Exactly. Making it to a bowl game, being 10-2, potentially 11-2, heading into the Sun Belt title game is absolutely fantastic. And, you know, we're talking about the fact that they have a chance to make it into the New Orleans Bowl. I think that's just absolutely fantastic. Sure, people may be a little bit NOLA bowled out, but guess what?
After last year,
yeah,
right, there's an opportunity to come back. You had the Cure Bowl last year, a very early kickoff. This certainly would be a different affair. And so about the only way this thing won't end well for the Cajuns is if Billy Napier ends up moving on. We touched on that during yesterday's show, but as I give you today's guest list, know that we're going to go back down that rabbit hole at the end of the show. So stick with me. We got three great guests today. Dean Leggy is coming aboard in less than 25 minutes. So just after 4:30, he is the publisher of DogPost.com. We're going to catch up with Dean live from Athens, Georgia, and get the UGA side of the SEC title game. At 5:05, it's Tuesday, it's tradition, Shea Dixon hopping aboard. We got a lot of recruiting to get to. This numbers crunch that was inevitable for LSU's 2020 class, he'll describe that, and he'll also give us the latest on Zach Evans, number one running back in the country from just outside of the Houston area, where LSU stands with Evans. So Shea coming aboard at 5:05, and as we end the show today, we're out of here at 6 for Tiger Ag Radio. At 5:45, we go to Oxford, Mississippi. Ben Garrett, Ole Miss Spirit. How and why that Matt Luke got fired, but then looking forward, how realistic is it that Billy Napier could end up as the next head coach of the Ole Miss Rebels? It's a question we got to ask, and we will. So Dean Leggy, Shea Dixon, and Ben Garrett coming your way. One other thing that I'd be remiss if I didn't touch on before we hit our opening break. I'll never shy away from anything on this show when it's important to you and it's important to us. I recognize that yesterday we put out a sink or swim question, and we asked you which event pleased you most, sporting event, from your Thanksgiving weekend. We gave you LSU over A&M, we gave you Saints over Falcons, and we gave you Bama losing to Auburn. We did not, and we should have, given you UL over ULM. So I'm giving you a heartfelt, sincere apology, and I mean that. I'm a season ticket holder, love going to the Cajuns game, an honest omission. You better believe, however, that there's a comma but on the end of this. But why don't those of you who got up in arms on all forms of social media, why don't you do me a favor as well while I give you a sincere apology? Why don't you spare me the faux outrage, for real? If you care that much, Call this show when we talk Raging Cajuns. Don't give me crickets. If you care that much, show up to Cajun Field. If you care that much, let's get involved with Raging Cajuns talk and not just stand behind a Twitter keyboard. Yeah, how does that feel? We'll hit a quick timeout, and then we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Well, it's a combination of a handful of things. They do a great job up front getting after the quarterback. So the time that quarterback has to throw isn't as long, and they're extremely talented in the back end in coverage. You know, they do a good job of understanding their zones, understanding their mans, and understanding the scheme they're playing.
Saints head coach Sean Payton getting ready for a big ball game. Who wants to be the number one seed in the NFC? This Sunday in New Orleans goes a long way toward determining that. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back with you on 103.7 The Game. We've got time for you. You want to get on the phone lines? Yeah, I threw a few things at you in the opening segment. Feel free to come our way. 706-0111. But a few moments to talk some NFL, I'll always nibble there. And before we even get to Saints taking on the Niners, what you just heard from Sean Payton on that Niners pass rush, how about one of Payton's cohorts in the NFC South, canned? And I mean within the last 90 minutes, Ron Rivera fired after 9 years leading the Carolina Panthers. And in some ways, that's crummy news if you're a Saints fan. Why? Well, it's nice to know who thy enemy is, especially when you very regularly beat thy enemy. And the Saints have made a regular punching bag out of the Carolina Panthers. So I think that this could have an absolute impact on whether or not the franchise moves forward with Cam Newton. After this season, Cam, of course, has been injured just about all of this year. But as far as the remainder of this regular season, after basically eliminating themselves in the playoffs this past weekend, Ron Rivera done Tuesday mid-afternoon. And so the Panthers will move on. And the Saints, as I referenced, they're looking to move on and really get a stranglehold on that number one spot in the NFC. And I'll continue to maintain last night's result was good news. Again, I think if you're a Saints fan, hey, you might have preferred that Rivera stuck around because you like beating up on him in the Panthers. But I think you also did prefer Seattle to beat Minnesota, which they did in a dramatic game on Monday Night Football. Why? Well, now all of a sudden, San Francisco went from the number one seed in the NFC prior to their game at Baltimore this weekend. They are now the number five seed in a wild card. They're second in the NFC West. And so Seattle has been absolutely surging since losing to the Saints in the Great Northwest with Teddy Bridgewater at the helm in what feels like a lifetime ago, but in reality it was about 7 or 8 weeks ago. So now this thing is setting up. If the Saints can beat the Niners, they're in the driver's seat for the one seed. Seahawks driver's seat for the two seed. I think that fits perfectly if you're a Saints fan. But you got to beat the Niners to do that. And today's sink or swim question, it's going to probe exactly how you feel about the matchup in the Dome.
Exciting and new.
Let's get to it. Your sink or swim question of the day. Which part of the 49ers team concerns you most this Sunday? So you look at a matchup of a team that's only lost a handful of games, and you know they're talented. They don't have a world beater quarterback, but they have certain places where they are elite. Not good, but just flat out elite. Which area concerns you the most as you're looking at the Saints trying to get another W? 706-0111. CD, lead us off.
For me, Ben, I think without a doubt, it's the position that I feel like has always been a big pain in the neck for many Saints fans just to see, and that is the tight end position. I think George Kittle has shown himself to be an absolute beast over the last couple of seasons, and I think he's going to wind up giving the Saints a lot of bugaboo like we saw in the last few seasons whenever the Saints play the Carolina Panthers and you see Greg Olsen, especially a healthy Greg Olsen. I think we'll see that with George Kittle. For me, that's the biggest thing that I'm most concerned about is how they play against a solid tight end like Kittle.
I think it's their defense as a whole, to be completely honest with you. And you heard Sean Payton addressing the pass rush with Richard Sherman coming over in the offseason. They've got a little bit of a different system in the way they deploy their secondary, right? Maybe a little more zone in base than the Saints are used to seeing. And so how do the receivers not named Michael Thomas react to that? I do think in a number of ways it's this defense. But I will give you another alternative to think about. The 49ers this year have been able to plug and play running backs and have success. And the crazy part is, well, it is musical chairs. I mean, last week, just crazy, Raheem Mostert, whoever the heck that is, if you don't play fantasy football, you have no idea who that is. But Raheem goes for 146 yards and a touchdown on the ground. Throughout this year, it's been Matt Breida. I mean, throughout this year, they've gone down the line. Tevin Coleman, who was with Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta, has been a great receiving back. I think it's going to be incumbent upon the Saints linebacking core, which now has Manti Te'o back healthy. We learned that today. Those cats are going to have to keep up with the backs, not just running it behind a good offensive line, but coming out of the backfield as well. And so I think it's huge for the Saints to keep an eye on the 49ers' backs. That's what we think. What do you think? We'll find out. We're going to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Matt, you are first up today. What do you have for us?
Man, I got a couple things. First on the Saints, 49ers. Obviously, defensive line is a huge concern. That defensive line is incredibly talented. Secondly, Richard Sherman is going to play head games with Michael Thomas. That guy has forgotten more than most cornerbacks will ever know. So, that's definitely going to be a challenge for the Saints, for sure. And lastly, just on the Ron Rivera thing, I find it really peculiar for a couple reasons, especially because Christian McCaffrey has really taken off here recently. Kind of throws some mixed signals on what the Panthers are trying to do going forward. Just really, really odd in my opinion. And that's all I got.
Matt, we appreciate you. I'll expound on that a little bit. We'll take some more calls as well. 706-0111. If memory serves, the Panthers ran off GM Dave Gettleman here within the last, 2 years? Went to the New York Giants. I guess my point would be this. Taking what Matt said, right? Taking that baton and sprinting ahead with it. Okay, new GM, new head coach. And as I suggested, I think the potential for new starting quarterback, I mean, in just about every possible scenario and every facet with the exception of ownership, the Panthers are turning over a completely new leaf. And this franchise, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, was playing for a Super Bowl with Cam Newton and Ron Rivera and losing one of the most boring Super Bowls of all time to the Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning post neck hurt, right? It wasn't that long ago. I mean, Clint, seriously, look that up for me. That's got to be about 4 years ago, I'm thinking.
Yeah, that happened in 2015.
So that would have been the 2015 season played in February of 2016?
No, this was February 2015.
I don't think that's right.
I'm almost certain.
It wasn't right because I wasn't doing this show in February of 15, and we discussed that game on this show. Had to be February of 16.
I think, now that I'm thinking about it, it was 16.
You've got the Google machine at your fingertips.
I believe it was, because I was at the tap room watching that game.
There you go. And you don't even drink, so somebody got a free ride home that night. So my point would be we are within 4 years, it's safe for me to say, of that ball game, and they are a completely different franchise. And to Matt's point, Christian McCaffrey has been taking off, but it's maybe the worst balanced offense in the NFL. Seriously. There are offenses that are worse. I mean, Washington's been pretty tough to watch this year. I know that both Darius Geis and Adrian Peterson went for big games last week, but, look, you can give me cases for worse offenses. But as far as balance, nobody is shouldering more of a load than Run CMC. So I will give you that this is strange, and I want to know the direction they're going as well. But I like some of the feedback we got from Matt on this secondary, Richard Sherman versus Michael Thomas, and then the pass rush. Ultimately, Clint's brings a good answer to the table in George Kittle. Kittle didn't have a great game against Baltimore. He's been a little dinged up, but George Kittle is absolutely a top three tight end in the league. So you got to account for him. I'm giving you the running backs to think about. We're talking about the secondary, but I do think probably the number one answer, which unit on this 49ers team concerns you the most? Yeah, it's the pass rush. We're not that far removed I mean, less than a month to be exact. We don't have to look up that date, Clint. We're less than a month removed from the Saints getting just absolutely annihilated by the Falcons and Breeze being hit like 17 times and sacked 6 times. And they're still playing without Andrus Peat, and they're still doing some shuffling occasionally. This offensive line, it got healthy by playing Atlanta on Thanksgiving night. Can they do the same against a really talented defensive front? That is going to be a major question this game. It'll be a huge factor on whether or not the Saints can remain with only 2 hash marks in the L column. So a big ball game coming up on Sunday. Frankly, an even bigger ball game is coming Saturday. LSU taking on Georgia live from Atlanta. And our man Dean Leggy is going to be all over that from the Bulldog side of things. So we'll get a Silver Britches preview on the other side of this break. Dean Leggy, dogpost.com. And just why has there not been trust? And it's so obvious to watch it. I'm not coming up with this storyline. Everybody can see it. The coaching staff at Georgia doesn't trust Jake Fromm to consistently throw the forward pass. How do I recognize that? I covered LSU football for like the last 15 years. We all recognize the symptoms. We got to figure out exactly why it's happened. And I'm curious what Dean thinks transpires in this ball game on Saturday. So stick with us. We got a brief timeout, and then we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Hey, don't forget this Friday, Bumper to Bumper Sports will be live from the Championship Fan Fest outside of Cougar Stadium on the campus of St. Thomas More. I'm excited about this one. From 4 to 6:30, we'll have plenty of STM dignitaries getting you ready for the Cougars versus De La Salle for the Select Division II State Championship. Pretty rare times. You host the state championship in your building. You know BTBS has to be there. So make sure you dial us in this Friday on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Still 5 days away, but we need our previews, and we need them now. Let's talk some LSU Georgia and go behind enemy lines. We get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Dean Leggy joining us. He is the publisher of dogpost.com. Dean, how are you today?
Hey, Ben. How are you?
Doing great. I'm curious what the mood is these days in Athens. A very good season yet again, and yet still, I bet there are some thoughts that, man, this thing wasn't exactly as smooth as hoped for, wasn't to the level of the last couple of years?
Oh, Ben, you sound like Larry Munson.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's always pessimism in Athens because that's what's in the blood there, and there's just nothing around that. But you know, they've won 33 games the last 3 regular seasons. They've been blown out by Auburn in one of them, blown out, if you want to call that a blowout, against LSU last year, and then a loss to South Carolina this year in overtime. And they've been very consistent. But this season has not been as dominating as the ones in the recent past. They have been more reliant on their defense, as I think most people are well aware. But the results at the end of the day have gotten them to the conference championship game one more time. And, you know, there's you know, pessimism and Georgia fans aren't ever that far away from one another.
You know, everybody within the sound of my voice understands what it's like to watch a coaching staff that doesn't have trust in its quarterback to consistently throw the ball to win a game. They all watched LSU under Les Miles. Why does it seem to be that way this year with Fromm and the Georgia staff?
Well, I don't know if they've had trust issues. I think it's really been more execution issues. When the offense gets onto the field. Because, you know, if you watch, this is not the greatest example, but if you watch last weekend against Georgia Tech, they opened up the game with 4 straight, I think it was 3 straight passes for sure, and 4 of the first 5 plays were passes. Part of it then is that they don't have to throw to win to some of these games. I mean, the way that they beat Notre Dame and Florida was certainly with very good days from Jake Fromm. The way that they beat A&M and Auburn was with subpar days from Jake Fromm. I would not compare it to the LSU situation with Les Miles in the past because, I mean, at least in these cases, Georgia has a functioning vertical threat. Not a lot, but it's there. So, but they're not clicking. There's no question they're not clicking in the passing game, and that's affected a lot of the rest of the offense for sure.
Not fair analysis. Dean Leggy, DogPost.com, our guest on 103.7 The Game. In the way of injury updates, what can you tell us about DeAndre Swift?
Well, DogPost expects him to play. I don't think that there's going to be a lot in the way of him being 100%, quite frankly. But, you know, after 2 days in a row of, oh, yeah, you know, this, that, and the other, Kirby yesterday said we're hopeful he can play, which, I think after the game, they'll say, well, we were hopeful everyone would play. It's just how he is sometimes. So I think that if I were LSU, I'd be expecting plenty of DeAndre Swift on Saturday.
Knowing that Joe Burrow and this offense like to play fast, they can score quickly, how does Georgia's defense change this game and maybe impose its will to change maybe what you would consider a high-scoring, fast-paced ball game?
It's not going to be a fast-paced ball game the entire time because Georgia's going to sit on the ball. And that's not anything to do. I mean, that's what they've done the whole season. So it may effectively work against LSU just because that's who they play Saturday. But, I mean, against A&M, Auburn, everybody, Florida, they've let the play clock run. So when LSU's on the field, they may well go fast. And that, you know, listen, we're talking about at least the third best offense in the country, if not the best. I'll let Dabo and Justin Fields have explained their positioning on who the best team offensively is in the country. But when you're going up against what LSU's dealt with the entire season with the Gators and Auburn and just, you know, the plethora of skill in the SEC defenses, you know, you've got the case to be made that you're the best one. But they're not dealing with anything that they've dealt with before, maybe with the exception of Auburn. This Georgia defense is gonna frustrate you, whether you score points or not. Truth of the matter is they haven't allowed anybody to score a bunch of points. So it would be naive to think that this game's going to be played in the mid to high 30s or 40s. I mean, if LSU scores 35 points, they will have won the game going away.
You've covered a lot of really good Georgia defenses. What is it about this one that puts them up there in that type of echelon?
Well, they're the best one. I mean, I don't really know how else to say it. Because there's no one great player. So that becomes a problem because you can't really deal with, you know, well, we're going to scheme to this guy, you know. It's a little bit like LSU's offense. You know, okay, you want to scheme to Burrow? Fine. Well, we'll just use the running back and gas you down in the line of scrimmage. I mean, so it's problematic. That I couldn't tell you who their best defensive player is. And I'm not being cute or smart or anything like that. I don't know. And they've rotated so many guys that they got tired against Auburn. But beyond that, it's tough to score on these guys in the second half, particularly in the fourth quarter. So I don't know what makes them so good other than they're really solid everywhere. They rotate a lot of guys, not just on the defensive line, but at linebacker and even in the defensive back. It's just hard to get first down. Explosive plays are hard to find. If LSU wins this game, they will have earned it.
Dean, you know, and my listeners know as well, that I'm pretty biased, right? I grew up in South Louisiana. I attended the University of Georgia. But this rivalry, if you can call it that, this contest, right, is a lot of fun. And we've done this thing in Atlanta now, 03, 05, 11, and this year. What is it about the purple and gold and red and black that seems to mix so well?
Alcohol?
That's a good one.
They don't deal with one another all the time, and they have a lot of people they don't like in common, you know, Gators, Auburn, Alabama to some degree for Georgia, much more for LSU. I think you corrected yourself the right way there. I don't know that they view themselves as rivals. That term is way overused. But this is the second, you know, now this is the second most played SEC championship combination behind the Gators and Tide. I don't know, you know, because they've played a lot since 2003. Three, twice, four, five, eight, and nine. I don't have to go through the litany of times they played. They played some boring games where one team has blown the other out, and they played some classics. I mean, 03 and Baton Rouge was, I mean, if you like defense, that was the game for you. And then in 13, it's hard to have found a better offensive game than that game in the last decade in SEC play. I mean, Zach and Aaron were just chunking it all over the field. You have some serious receivers on the LSU side, and Georgia didn't. They weren't so bad on that front themselves. It's just I think there is a mutual respect that doesn't have a lot of hatred. Georgia completely respects Florida, but they don't like the Gators at all. it's not pretty. And with LSU, they just don't play every year. And even though they've come down to this many times where it's a championship situation, it's not been dirty at all yet. We'll see. And I don't think the other's head coach gets on the other's fan base's nerves. So that matters too.
I like that description. And you know, the next time that LSU will play between the hedges is 2025. That's a disgrace.
Well, but you know. If the schools are going to get back the $40 million plus dollars a year that they get from television rights, then they can play every year. But we live in the world we live in, and by 2025, that number will possibly certainly will double. It could come close to tripling. But we can't have it both ways. If I had my way, Georgia would never play Missouri again. It's just not a game that matters to me. It's an unfortunate situation. It's a byproduct of the league's situation and TV. LSU and Georgia are not, you know, just like Georgia and Bama. They're just not going to play each other very often.
Coming down the stretch with Dean Leggy on 103.7 The Game. Jake Fromm is the starting quarterback at Georgia, has been since he was a true freshman. And we can look up over there in Washington, and you've got a former starting quarterback from Georgia that's there. In Eason, obviously, yeah. Justin Fields at Ohio State. How do you kind of look back at that situation and the way it unfolded?
Well, they went with the best quarterback at the time. I mean, with Justin, and Justin has developed in the last year. He was not as good last year at all as he is this year. I mean, he needed to play, but he was, when he was in there, he wasn't doing what Fromm was doing at the time. As it relates to Jacob, who has tremendous NFL potential for sure, Georgia went with the hand that was winning, and Jacob was not going to stick around to just see what would happen. So Jake, there's a lot of J's in this story. So, you know, Jake is not going to, you know, it's a little bit like Mike Bobo used to say, the old offensive coordinator at Georgia. He's not going to apologize for winning the job. He's not going to apologize for being the best guy at the time. That he has not played well the last sort of five games at Georgia doesn't mean that he won't go out there and play really well against LSU. I mean, he didn't play well before Florida, and he lit the Gators up. So they're not going to apologize for picking him. He has done a lot. I mean, narrowly losing the national championship game 2 years ago. You know, you can't say that for Jacob. And as far as Justin's concerned, you know, we'll see what the future holds. I fully expect Ohio State to play in the national championship game. But I don't think that I can put in words the lack of apology that Georgia is going to have about it, because they've had so much success with Fromm. And this story is still not yet finished being written.
I love it. 100% correct. Dean Leggy's been our guest. Dean, wish me luck. I've got Shea Dixon, Ben Garrett in the 5 o'clock hour. I got to survive that monster stretch.
Well, she's going to have to survive Georgia. I know everybody's penciled them in or put them in ink, but this is not some sort of layup for LSU. They're going to have to deal with Georgia's crowd and its defense. LSU should win, but it's not going to be some sort of easy deal. So good luck with that.
All right, my man. You know, it's good catching up. Thanks for doing this.
See you, Ben.
Dean Leggy, dogpost.com. Didn't quite have enough time. Curious if he thinks with a Georgia win over LSU that the Tigers remain in the college football playoffs. We can go back to that on the other side of this break. Something else that I want to roll out. So I'll keep that under my sleeve for another moment or two. And after this timeout, we'll come back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
Yes, that is Larry Munson. So if our guy Dean Leggy wants to say, Ben, you sound like Larry Munson, I'm in there. Clint, I'll take that back one final time. I don't want to go full out Jim Rome on anybody, but this might be the greatest play-by-play call in the history of college football. This is Larry Munson, Georgia over Tennessee in Neyland Stadium with a young freshman playing quarterback.
We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
I love that call. Seriously, if you've never heard the full thing, you do not have to love Georgia football athletics to enjoy it. You're just going to have to trust me, though. There's more. Clint kneecapped it a little bit at the end, but we had to go for the brevity thing. No offense, CB.
Oh, Ben. You sound like Larry Munson.
And you're damn right, okay? And so that's the best compliment that maybe anybody could ever be paid. But at the end of that call, he just keeps coming back over it. Munson getting more and more emphatic. We just crushed their face. I mean, it's amazing. So you just got to trust me on this and Google it if you never have before. Our thanks again to Dean Leggy. And we do have Shea Dixon coming aboard in less than 15 minutes. A lot of recruiting information to discuss when it comes to LSU football. And one thing you may not be thinking about that Shea will address, Tigers, Bulldogs, one of the only downsides to playing in Atlanta in early December is you don't have that weekend for in-house visits. And so how does that alter Ogeron's recruiting approach for the next couple of weeks? Shea's going to touch on all of that. Again, he'll be with us at 5:05, and we will go to Oxford, Mississippi at 5:45. To end today's program, Ben Garrett will join us. A lot of wins trying to gust Billy Napier from Lafayette over to the Magnolia State. Over the weekend, it seemed to be that Mississippi State was the hot ticket. Now it sure seems that Ole Miss has Napier in its crosshairs. And so we're going to see if that is something that could come to fruition or not. We'll ask Ben Garrett that question less than an hour from this very moment. CD, we do have the college football playoff rankings tonight, and I fully anticipate that it will be the exact same four in the exact same order that we had last week. I think it's going to be Ohio State, LSU, Clemson, Georgia. Agree or disagree?
No, I 100% agree with you, because that's just the way I thought about it after last week, after the way the rankings came out, because of the fact that I expected to see Ohio State just put a hobnail boot in Michigan's backside. That's exactly what they did on Saturday.
That's not where you put a hobnail boot. Okay. If you've ever heard Larry Munson, you put it right
I've only heard it a couple times.
The nose, right, or the throat area.
Yeah.
Leave the backside alone with the hobnail boot. That just... You need a proctologist after that, and that's not anything anyone wants.
Yeah.
5, 6, 7 in order for me tonight. I'm expecting Utah, Oklahoma, Baylor. Agree, disagree?
I'd flip Oklahoma and Utah. I'd probably put Oklahoma at 5.
Now, let me clarify. You personally would, or you expect that's what they're going to do? Obviously, two different things.
I expect that they would go with Oklahoma at number 5 because of the fact that I think they're expecting LSU to beat Georgia in the SEC title game, and that way you can just go whoop, move Oklahoma from 5 to 4, you know, not really leave much doubt in there, because I think Oklahoma will handle Baylor on Saturday. I just don't think we see a Pac-12 team get into that Final Four. I'd be surprised.
It's a fascinating thing to try to go inside the mind of this selection committee. We'll take some of your calls on it. Expectations for how tonight plays itself out. 706-0111. Let us know what you got. Clint and I agree on the first four. It's the same as last week, same order. I think they're going to judge Ohio State's win over Michigan to be more worthy, or at least something that won't allow them to drop after LSU's win over A&M, although that LSU defense looked pretty complete. Now, when we discuss Utah and Oklahoma, you're almost convincing me to flip-flop, almost, because I love your point that you have an opportunity to put Oklahoma on the doorstep to where it's easier to just push them there. Because I do think if chalk holds serve this weekend that Oklahoma will jump Utah, unless Utah beats the ever-living you-know-what out of Oregon. I think Oklahoma's going to jump them, but to your point, you don't have to worry about jumping them if you put them there right now.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just the fact I feel like whenever you look at the way things will pan out tonight, is they're thinking about what's going to happen after Sunday. Because barring anything out of the ordinary, like Baylor beating Oklahoma, I think then you see Utah get into the college football playoff.
Run that back one more time?
If Baylor beats Oklahoma.
See, I don't think that's going to be enough. I don't think they're going to be able to jump Utah no matter what.
No, I'm saying Utah makes the college football playoff if Baylor beats Oklahoma.
Now we're on the same page.
That's where I'm at.
That's listening comprehension 101 for me. I'll get there.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, so I'm with you now. I don't think it's possible for Baylor to make it. I think for a while, and for better or for worse, a lot of us have grouped Baylor and Minnesota up until this last weekend in the same category, you know. If they can beat the behemoths in their conference and then win the conference title game, they've got a shot. I always thought that Minnesota had the better shot, right? Because they came down the stretch beating Wisconsin, and then they beat number one Ohio State. I honestly thought that Minnesota could have jumped to number four this week. But they didn't take care of their business against the Badgers. And so that means I don't think Baylor's case can be considered as legitimate. Just my two cents. And so we see it the same way, the way that this one will go down. I want to see if you have the same level of confidence before we run out of time in this hour as me. I believe that right now there's a 90% chance that even if LSU loses to Georgia, they still make the Final Four. Where do you stand?
I'm about there as well because it feels like there's no way that you leave out LSU, who went 12-0, beat Alabama, beat Auburn, beat all these like really great teams that are in that conversation of being like a top 15
in favor of Utah, who lost to 8-4 USC, who may or may not be firing their head coach.
Yes, exactly. Or even let's say Oklahoma.
In favor of Oklahoma, who lost to, I don't have the record, but very above average but not great, Kansas State,
who had to rally back and beat Baylor down 28-3.
That's true. That's true. And had to,
that lead's never safe.
And had to ward off TCU and Gary Patterson's Horned Frogs this year are not very formidable. So good stuff, CD. I'm with you. And a little bit of a preview from what's coming tonight. I believe it's week 5 of the college football playoff rankings that will be dispatched. There's only one more set of rankings that matter, and they're going to come after the conference championship game. So now we've kept you abreast. We got to head toward our hour break. We're going to do that, as always, with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Voice. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Head scratcher. And we announced earlier in the hour something that's less than 2 hours old, the news that the Carolina Panthers have fired head coach Ron Rivera. 9 years leading the Panthers in the NFC South. It is a head scratcher to me. Why you don't do it after the season? You got to have somebody in mind, right? That somebody has to be unemployed currently, right? To me, that's interesting. They want to get to the front of the line and pole positioning to get that next head coach that they covet. Rivera's done a pretty good job, maybe not great, but again, for me, it is a head-scratcher. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming right back. Shea Dixon, Ben Garrett, it's going to be fun, so stick with us. More Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one. We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
and live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
Wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 2 underway. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And for the next hour, you've got Bumper to Bumper Sports back in and live on 1037 The Game. Really good opening hour. We went to Athens, Georgia to talk with Dean Leggy. Got a preview of the Bulldog side of the SEC Championship game. This hour, going to let you hear from Kirby Smart. He had some very high praise for LSU running back Clyde Edwards-Helaire. We're also going to go behind enemy lines and let you hear from the head coach at App State, Eli Drinkwitz, what he had to say on Levi Lewis and these raging Cajuns. So we're getting ready for conference championship weekend. That's coming up. Cajuns will be early, LSU a little bit later in the afternoon. We have some great guests accompanying us in this hour as well. Ben Garrett at the bottom of the hour will take us into Tiger Rag Radio at 6 o'clock. But right about now, it is time for our main man. It's Tuesdays, and you know how we get down. We got to talk Cruton. We got to flip the script. That means we got to have Shea Dixon.
Bring them out, bring them out, bring them out.
It's time for Shea Dixon of Go247.
It's not hard to yell when Shea Dixon's aboard. Yeah, I think you all got it. A little bit of rap puns, and it is time for Shea Dixon, go247.com. Brother, hope you had a tremendous Thanksgiving. Great to have you back. How the heck are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. Yes, good Thanksgiving. I hope everyone in the Acadian area had a good Thanksgiving. Was in the building for the 50-7 win for LSU. It was a great environment, man. And I know that sort of people have shared their thoughts on the game and the experience, and videos have gone viral. But that senior for a senior night for a kid who's only been here 2 years was one of the more memorable kind of not just senior nights moments I can give you across the golly. I've been covering LSU in that stadium since 2004. So 15 years, I can't remember a time that was kind of that cool with Burrow and the EAUX and all of that. It was memorable. It was fun to be there.
Yeah, iconic. That's the word I keep seeing tossed around. I think it's appropriate. Let's get to recruiting first. Then we flip the script per the huge. Zach Evans, top running back in the country from the Houston area, no longer announcing his commitment tomorrow. What else can you share with us?
Well, yeah, the big news, look, let's start by saying this. Evans plays at North Shore, five-star, number one running back out of Houston, has been one of those kids, and there are a handful in each cycle who plays so close to the vest that you never really know what's going on. He'll never go public with who's in what position in terms of the pecking order of who he likes. And when he came out on Sunday and said, hey, I'm committing on Wednesday, that was the most shocking thing he's ever done, because he's the type who said, look, I'm going to make all five of my visits, and he doesn't. Or I'm going to go visit this school this weekend. Guess what? I'm kidding. I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going to sit at the house. And he marches to the beat of his own drum. I'm not knocking him. I'm just giving the reality that whatever he feels like doing is what he does. And for him to say he was going to do it on Wednesday, short of the early signing period, I was a bit surprised. So when he came out today, his camp confirmed with us at 24/7. That it's not on for Wednesday anymore, which was less surprising than him actually, you know, saying he was going to do it then. Instead, he's going to wait to the Under Armour game, which is what, beginning of January, do it on national TV then for ESPN. And then from there, we'll know where he's going. But one thing I'm watching, Ben, and I do think that he's still – LSU's still the team to beat. I think that if anybody thinks that A&M, after going 7-5 and losing the five games to the five good teams on their schedule, and Jimbo feeling the pressure of needing to live up to that paycheck, if they think they're going to roll over and not try to get the best player in the state here down the stretch, you're kidding yourself. So I think they're in it. But I'd watch for, because this has happened with the early signing period, I can sign with you. If I'm signing with Ben Love University, and you can hold it. You don't have to announce anything on signing day. And you can let me have it on my time. So I wouldn't be surprised if Zach says, okay, I'm signing with a college. They're not going to say anything. They won't put it in any release. I get to announce at the Under Armour game in January. But still, then it'll be public that, hey, look, I'm already on the books for a team. I'm ready to roll. And I don't have to wait anymore until this February signing day.
never question that we are cooking the books at Ben Love University. That just needs to be
100%.
Understood. Right. You know, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, rubbing is racing, all those things. Speaking of numbers crunches, LSU's in the midst of one of those situations right now. I don't think it surprises anybody, Shea, that LSU's had to come off of that 25 that they got to very, very quickly. How it's happening, I know, ruffles some feathers, but I'll let you give your two cents on what we're witnessing and kind of, I guess, how it all comes to fruition.
Yeah, LaRondo Johnson, sort of a nickelback type of guy out of Texas, a four-star, really good player, announced earlier this week, over the weekend, that he was reopening, or excuse me, I think his exact terminology was he was exploring all options. He's currently still listed as an LSU commitment. I'd be a bit surprised if he signs with LSU, and we've now seen this happen with a handful of different players, and I think we've got at least one or two more coming. And it's like you said, you got to figure out a way. If the NCAA says, hey, at Ben Love University, you're cooking all your books, but you are under us. You can still only sign 25, then that's the rule. And Ed Orgeron has not so much said it publicly, but it's the obvious approach of, I'm not signing the first 25 we get. I'm signing the best 25 we get. And, you know, newsflash, LSU is 12-0 undefeated, number one in the polls, number two in the playoff rankings, playing for an SEC title for the first time since 2011. What the position they were in with recruits now is a bit different than before the season when they took 20-something kids, which was a very good class. But now you're swinging with kind of even the more upper echelon guys. So because of that, you got to find a way to say, hey, what positions do we really need? Who do we really need to finish with? Who do we really want to finish with, even if it's a luxury? And then sort of toss in academics and everything like that. And at the end, hope you're coming out with a nice steak dinner. And that's what they're looking to cook up right now. So metaphorically speaking, they're still in the kitchen. I mean, we're not done yet with seeing the finished product of this class. And we have a feel for how it could play out, but I do think we're in for a little bit of entertainment here down the stretch, just because even with a couple of spots left, which it could become four spots left or something like that, this still could go in so many different directions, given they've got 10, 11, 12 guys they are legitimately in it for. Some of them they lead for.
Master Chef Shea Dixon joining us now, as he does every Tuesday on 103.7 The Game. He will be in Atlanta this weekend. And so too will LSU's team. Shea, how does that change the recruiting structure, given that just about everybody else, aside from Georgia in the conference, and everybody else around the country, is out there going in-home this weekend?
Yeah, I thought you were going to ask, how was me being in Atlanta going to change it for LSU? It changes the whole game. Where, you know, I mean, if I'm not in Baton Rouge, what are you going to do? This is interesting, because what we've had, the early signing period, meaning a December signing period, so kind of split up like basketball's always been, where you can sign in now December or February for, what, 3 years, 4 years? I guess it ultimately doesn't matter how long. It hasn't been since 2011, which is the last time LSU went to Atlanta. So LSU's in a unique spot here. Everybody is signing on December 18th, 19th range, and you are spending this whole week prepping for Georgia while every other team in the SEC, beyond Georgia, is out on the road recruiting, and they're going in home with kids and all of that. So they've already got a head start on you, and you've got to go move into next week. And look, I mean, Ed Orgeron could send his coaches out this week, but you go to Atlanta and lose to Georgia, and everybody's going to say, are you kidding me? You are worried about recruiting kids that you already had committed or that you could have done next week, and instead, you know, you weren't focusing on the game as much as you could have been. So no risk being taken here. Orgeron's keeping all his coaches in Baton Rouge. They're going to go over the game plan, go be with the team, normal game week. But boy, when I think it's Sunday at like 11 or 12, 11 a.m. or 12 p.m., in that range, you find out what bowl you go to, and we'll know the playoff schedule. And then they're sending them right out on the road. Planes, trains, and automobiles, my friend. And Ed Orgeron said that when he sat down on Monday before his press conference, he kind of did a rough draft of his in-home visits, and he's fitting 20 in already, and that number is going to grow. So evidenced by that, and if you multiply all the other assistants that are going to be out there seeing guys, they're going to try to hit on every single kid that they've got committed, get in home with them, hit on every single target that they've still got in there, you know, out left in front of them, and go in home with them. And then the following weekend, which will be the final weekend, not this one, but the next one, will be the final weekend before the early signing period, and they'll have a bunch of official visitors. The kind of unique part about that is most of the official visitors, probably the good part, are committed guys. And I say all the uncommitted kids, Ben, that they're still after have been guys who, Phillip Webb and Zach Evans and Jordan Birch and Marcus Dumervil, all these kids took their official visits with their family either in the spring, which is why they're allowing kids to go in the spring so you don't have to fit it in right now, or in the summer or during the season, which is what Evans and them did. So it's kind of a good thing, yes. You know, you hate to spend an official visit in the spring because it's so long until someone has to sign. But if you're in this spot now where you're playing for a championship and you kind of just don't have the time to fit it all in, you're happy that you did get those guys to campus when you did.
There you have it. All the recruiting intel you need. Shea Dixon, go247.com. Partner, let's flip the script. We're going to have to go lightning round style, but fire away. What do you have for me?
Yeah, well, look, let's start off with this. When you look at the college football playoffs tonight, this is lightning round. So who your top four are quickly. This should, I mean, I guess it should be obvious, but in an order.
Same exact order as last week. Ohio State, okay. LSU, Clemson, Georgia.
If chalk holds, and obviously that would mean Georgia loses, who deserves to get in? Who deserves it to be in if everybody, you know, if all goes as planned? And I guess predict a winner of the Utah-Oregon, since that would be kind of one tight matchup.
I think you can make a strong case that Utah deserves to get in, but my gut tells me, Shea, that Oklahoma is going to get in. So for me, Oklahoma wins and they're in. If Baylor wins, Utah is in.
Where does this Dabo Sweeney crying about the world hates us and nobody loves Clemson and, you know, we beat South Carolina and we get talked about, Georgia loses South Carolina and it's how do we keep Georgia in? And then the Vegas odds come out today and Clemson's got the best shot, you know, to win the national championship. Where does he stack up right now on your dude, chill out, get off the soapbox kind of rankings of the decade?
Gosh, you put it perfectly there. And this guy's been on point, by the way, with former rants. When he went in on Clemsoning, you know, back in the gap before they were winning natty ships, I thought it was brilliant. I don't get this one because what else could you ask for than to be 12-0 on the verge of 13-0, defending national champs and still being disrespected? That's the best possible place to be if you're a coach because you still have motivation for your kids that you don't have to even manufacture. And frankly, Shea, it's the reason that I hope LSU is still number two after tonight. That gives extra motivation for the Georgia game in case you needed some and to avoid any form of complacency. So I'm with you, Dabo. Just chill, dude. You guys are doing some pretty tremendous things, and you've got every opportunity to defend as national champs. Who cares what the people think about you?
Yeah, well, or do people even think that? That would be my other thing. It's like, do people really feel that way? I don't know. You have the number one recruiting class like 3 years, in, you know, 3 years in a row. Chill out. Yeah, that's more of a PJ Fleck move for me. Like if you're at a Minnesota, not at Clemson, get off it. Look, I know we're bouncing around, lightning round. Like it, love it, hate it, that this year there are 13, no more than that, 15 to 16 days, if I don't know how many days are in the month of December, but December 28th is when a team or four teams will play the semis. January 13th is when they'll play the national championship. So we're rocking almost Super Bowl style here. Of a two-week break.
I love it. And I'm betting it also has to do something with Nick Saban whining about it, right? This is kind of the Saban rule because his teams have blistered everybody except 2015 Ohio State in national semifinal games, Shea. But they've now lost twice to Clemson in national championships. They don't look anywhere near as good as they usually are against Clemson. Part of that has to do with how good Dabo's teams typically are. I think the other part of it is they're lights out just about. When they have 3 to 4 weeks to prepare. On a one-week turnaround, hadn't been quite the same for the Tide. So call it the Saban rule, but I still do like it. It gives everybody a chance to get rested, healthy, and let's do this damn thing for the ship.
Who is LSU, not named Ohio State, who would LSU most want to play in the first round of college football playoffs?
Oh, in order, they want to play Utah, then Oklahoma, and then Clemson, right? And frankly, if you were to even add Ohio State to that mix, I think the order LSU would prefer to play these teams in, Utah, then it would be Oklahoma, then it would be Ohio State, and then Clemson. I think Clemson is the team that they would least want to play. That's my two cents.
What does your gut tell you about Georgia LSU this weekend?
Double digit, point win for the Tigers. I'm thinking like 13 or 14 points. This spread actually kind of floors me. Georgia now looks like LSU latter years under Les. They don't trust the quarterback. They don't let him express the offense, and it shows. The defense is outstanding, but unless they get special teams help and a lot of turnovers, which Burrow hasn't exactly been serving up this year, I don't see how Georgia's got a really great chance in this ball game. So give me LSU by 13 or 14.
You know, I'll wrap it up here, and maybe from the national side. You might hear this from all your buddies. You, full disclosure, you went to UGA. Why are people, and I guess because they're in the SEC championship right now, so no harm, no foul, but why are people not ripping Kirby Smart in Georgia for two things? One, why are you the last team that's still trying to run a pro-style offense? We saw LSU move to doing what they didn't reinvent the wheel. They just do what Oklahoma and Bama and you know, Ohio State, all these Clemson, what they do, and now we've seen the results. And B, that Justin Fields may be the runner-up for the Heisman, and you ran him out of town for Fromm, who you don't even trust.
I think they had to make the move to keep Fromm, but what they've done with the offense since, you're right, they should be taking more of a battering for that. When a guy takes you to the national championship as a true freshman, and I don't care if Chubb and Michelle were in the backfield, you have to respect that. I think you had to go with the hot hand. I don't blame them for what they did. I do blame them for going full Cro-Magnon with the offense. More people probably should.
Full Cro-Magnon. I like it. 3 yards in a cloud of dust, my friend. We'll get to witness it up close this weekend. It's like, it's so funny hearing him talk about this, and that's what we've been living, right, for 15 years of covering LSU is the Georgia offense. So, well, now Kirby Smart can deal with it.
It's somebody else's problem. Shea, you are our solution every Tuesday. Thank you, my man. Have a safe trip to the ATL.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
We got to take a quick trip to a timeout break. But after this TO, we're going to come back and let you hear from Kirby Smart and Eli Drinkwitz. How about the opposing head coaches for the Mountaineers of App State and the Bulldogs of Georgia? Get ready to take on your Cajuns and Tigers. Stick with us. The timeout and then more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports. But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Running down another segment of B2BS. Glad to have you with us. Ben and Clint taking you home on this Tuesday, December the 3rd. You've heard from Dean Leggy, Shea Dixon. Do not forget that Ben Garrett coming aboard in about 20 minutes. And that one should be intriguing. Ben Garrett live from Oxford, Mississippi. And a lot of rumors swirling about Billy Napier, possibly the next head coach in Oxford. Could it be? I will ask Ben G. That's coming up again at 5:45. But let's continue some previewing of championship weekend. And I want you to hear from Kirby Smart, because this to me is very telling. Everybody knows that Joe Burrow is the straw that stirs the drink. But without question, number 22, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he's got the attention of every defensive-minded coach that he encounters. Listen and be ready quickly for the description that Kirby Smart gave of Edwards-Helaire.
Baller. I mean, he is a football-playing machine. When they cut out a running back and say this is going to be a running back, this guy is as explosive quickness, short area quickness. He makes the best football tacklers in our conference miss. So when you got football players that are playing against him from Auburn, Florida, Alabama, and he's making a miss, you get immediate respect with the toughness that he runs with. And, the kid has got – he's got an incredible drive and ability and willingness to break tackles and toughness that I just respect. He plays the game the way it should be played. And you know what? They play him an awful lot because he's really good.
Pretty interesting, right? And pretty high praise. Clint, one more time, play it just so we can get the first word.
Baller.
Boom. Whenever my time comes, many, many moons from now, that's all I want my eulogy to be for whoever gives it.
Baller.
That's it. Nothing more than that. How about a little more, though, from Kirby Smart? And then we'll go over to the UL App State side of the aisle. Smart did go off on LSU's defense, and he tells you here he believes Georgia's head coach that LSU's defense is starting to play better.
They're playing better. You know, I think they're playing more with a purpose. And sometimes when you get called out or maybe you're playing a better team, they played well in some big games. And you know, I don't know where all the criticism comes about their defense. Obviously, probably from the Ole Miss situation, but that was completely unique. I mean, it was unique to Ole Miss. It was very different what they do with the quarterback they have. So that's not something that you just say, well, they struggle against this. That's not what everybody does. That was very different style offense.
Let's go now to the Sun Belt Conference Championship game that'll be played 11 a.m. from Boone, North Carolina. Eli Drinkwitz, head coach for the App State Mountaineers, was asked about facing the Cajuns four times in 2 years.
I think the biggest thing is your players know, you know, they understand what their matchup's going to be, and they understand who they've gone against and how they've gone against them. As coaches, I think we have to do a good job of not trying to over-scheme the game and just let our players play. And, you know, try to find whatever advantages we might think we have in offense, defense, and special teams, but don't try to overdo it. We're not going to win this game from the press box. We're going to win it from on the football field. And players got to play, and that's what we'll do Saturday.
Let's get his 2 cents now before we have to head into a break on the Cajun straw that stirs the drink. And no, it's not a really good offensive line. No, it's not an outstanding backfield. But lately, more and more, it's been quarterback Levi Lewis.
Well, I think teams have committed more to stopping the run. I think they felt like the success we were able to have stopping the run was the way to defeat the team, and which has allowed for more one-on-one opportunities. They've got some big wide receivers that create tough matchups. They've been making some tremendous catches. The quarterback's also been able to extend plays with his feet and then being able to find wide receivers down the field. So they're playing at a high level offensively right now.
You know, one thing that must be said, if you're going to stop the Cajuns' rushing game, it's one thing to look at the App State film and say, you know what, we got to do what they did. You got to have their players. I was at that game. They've got some dudes defensively for App State. Watch 24 when you watch that game this weekend for the Mountaineers. He is an absolute freak, and they've got some huge, I mean, power five size talent that moves awfully well too. So Levi Lewis will have to be instrumental in this contest. All right, we're halfway home in our 5 o'clock hour. Here's the game plan. When we return, we got to throw shade at where the mothership has the Saints in their latest NFL power rankings. They've made a big error, and I'm going to get after them for that. We'll do that, and then Ben Garrett live from Ole Miss at 5:45. It's all followed, chased, if you will, by Tiger Rag Radio 6 to 8, and then LSU basketball tip-off at home against UNO at 8 o'clock. So stick with us. After a timeout, you've got all that coming right at you on 103.7 The Game.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
Back in, Clint, I blame you, because that's what I always do. But we should have seen the writing on the wall. Yesterday, I'm not even sure we brought this up on the program, the mothership had their FPI, their Football Power Index, Bama at third, one spot ahead of LSU. Okay, the system is broken with the FPI, right?
Without a doubt, it's absolutely positively broken, Ben. And this is what I mentioned to you, like, off air when you brought up 538, was the fact that they actually use the FPI, obviously because they're an offshoot of the four-letter network. I think that one being a big reason why we were talking about that 17%.
Yes. Good call. That 538 offshoot has LSU as a 17%. I guess they gave them a 17% chance.
If they lose against Georgia.
If they lose against Georgia, still make the Final Four. Right. And I think that the number is higher than that. I think it's a lot higher than that. And so you thought that the buffoonery with percentages and rankings was over at the mothership yesterday. Hold my beer, said today. I'll get to that in a moment. But first, I got to remind you, it's your daily PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. The inventory, it's the tip of the iceberg, but it is fantastic. The standing seam metal awnings, the retractable shades and screens. Make sure you understand, though, it's the vision, frankly. The fact that Mark and company are going to sit down with you, internalize what you're looking for, and then deliver beyond your wildest dreams. The end result, you're going to have the baddest patio game on your block. That can become a reality this spring, this summer. When you're out there barbecuing, it's going to be the best spring and summer yet. If you head to the website, patiocenter.com. And this holiday season, I recommend that you do. They are the kings of customization, and it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Not to be outdone, the FBI, which had Alabama, you know, two-loss Alabama at number three. How about the mothership's power rankings in the NFL? Yes, this takes into account the entirety of the Week 13 slate that just came and went. It waited until after Seattle beat Minnesota Monday night. And Clint, they spit out a rankings that had the Saints as the fifth best team in the NFL. Yes, number one seed in the NFC, New Orleans, fifth in the NFL. There are five teams that are now 10-2 in the NFL, and they've got the Saints, 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth. I'm not going to sing it like Dave Chappelle, but you get my drift. What in the hell is that? I understand that they could use another receiving threat outside of Michael Thomas, but other than that, maybe an offensive line injury here or there. I don't know how you nitpick this Saints team and put them any lower than third in the NFL. I could see a case for them being the best team in the NFL. But everybody's in love with Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. Clint, this one to me is absolutely unbelievable. The Saints, fifth in the power rankings. I might need a drink.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Please tell me how you feel about that.
It's a little discerning to me because it just feels like consistently Louisiana isn't getting nearly the amount of love they should. And we talk about LSU with the FPI and 538's whole thing. I'm still trying to understand how the hell they got to this point. But with the NFL power rankings top five, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think they should be at least a top three team. I can understand at least somewhat of where they're going with these power rankings because of how the form for the Saints has been the last few weeks. Obviously, you look at what they did with against the Panthers. It took a last-second field goal from Lutz and the three straight onside kicks. Mind you, the first one didn't count. I feel like they're looking at how they've performed over the last couple weeks, and that's definitely bringing them down a little bit in those rankings. As opposed to, you know, we talk about all the time with form. I think that's the biggest thing for me.
A discerning eye might say that it's actually concerning to you, but I do like the rationale, and I'm right there with you. The last few weeks haven't been dominant. There's still that game within the last month. The Falcons may be dangling in the head of some of these people, these chuckleheads making the rankings. But, yeah, Louisiana team's getting knocked down a peg or two. That's fine. Just keep playing it out and winning on the field. When we return, got to bring aboard Ben Garrett, Ole Miss spirit, the possibility of Billy Napier to Oxford, how real is that? We'll ask that question. We got a brief timeout, and then we're coming right back in with more of the good stuff. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Back in to put a bow on your 5 o'clock hour. It's been a fun day so far. Let's keep that going. We got to go elsewhere in the land of Dixie in the Southeastern Conference. Out aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, it's our good buddy Ben Garrett. Covers the Ole Miss Rebels for Ole Miss Spirit, an affiliate of 24/7 Sports. How are you, Ben?
I'm exhausted, Ben. You know that. How are you?
I do know that, and you're a trooper for doing this. Take us through
only
the events.
Only for you, my friend. I'm just going to tell you that. Only for you.
I'm grateful, and I believe it when you say it. But take us through the events of Matt Luke getting let go and the level of surprise, or I guess non-surprise for you.
I wasn't surprised. I'd gotten word late Friday, early Saturday, that Matt had indicated he wanted to make some staff changes and was effectively told he couldn't, and that immediately, as a beat reporter, send your antennas up. He was 100% going to get 2020 going into the Egg Bowl. He was 100% going to keep his job Friday, well into Friday evening. But the further Ole Miss got away from how embarrassing that night was, because it was a national embarrassment for Ole Miss, and the more information that was flooding the inboxes of Glenn Boyce, the chancellor, and Keith Carter, the athletics director, and the pushback they were getting, not just from casual fans, but big money donors, led them to realize that there just wasn't a path forward with Matt Luke. Because if they did hold on to Matt, the historically bad attendance this year was only going to get worse. The historically tough sales of season tickets this year were going to get exponentially worse. And you were dealing with the possibility of losing a fan base and not getting it back. You got to remember, dude, Ole Miss fans have been through a lot for 9 years. A six-year NCAA colonoscopy and feeling like they were misled by their leadership. Then the replacement for Hugh Freeze is Matt Luke, who was on Hugh Freeze's staff, and a lot of Hugh Freeze's staff was still here. They wanted a clean slate. They didn't get it. A lot of the parties that were principal to the NCAA case, Ross Bjork and Michael Thompson, were still here. They're now at A&M. But they kept feeling like they were getting dealt, for lack of a better term, a can of crap over and over and over. And I think that that all kind of crescendoed when they had that national embarrassment during the Egg Bowl, or after the Egg Bowl, and it all came crashing down on Keith Carter over the course of the next couple of days.
So true or false, if that moment doesn't happen at the end of the Egg Bowl, Matt Luke is still the head coach?
Probably, yeah. Wow. Probably. I mean, here's the deal, though. Even if I still think that Ole Miss would have moved on after that loss. I really do. Even if it wasn't so embarrassing. I think that losing that game, maybe Keith and Glenn Boyce could have gotten away with it. Maybe the outcry from fans and from donors wouldn't have been so strong. But you got to understand, Matt Luke wasn't a popular hire when he was hired. He won some people over, and of course, fans are going to ultimately rally behind the dude that's their head coach, and they have rallied behind Matt Luke to a point. But he lost a lot more people when he went 5-7, 1-7 in the SEC last year, with NFL talent on offense that was generational, and A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, Dawson Knox, Jordan Tiamu was a good quarterback, and they won five games and only one game in the conference. And that really soured some folks. He made some staff changes in the offseason. Mike McIntyre was a great hire. Rich Rod, jury's out in my opinion. I'm of the opinion that was not the right fit, but all those things considered, yeah, I mean, I think if he loses the Egg Bowl, I mean, the Egg Bowl is what got him the job. Stands to reason, even if it wasn't embarrassing, he could have lost him the job. And I still think we'd have been here today. But maybe the pressure wouldn't have been what it was. So all of that stuff, all those factors, all that pressure is what led Ole Miss to ultimately making the decision it felt it had to make.
Talking Shop with Ben Garrett, Ole Miss Spirit, joining us live from Oxford on 103.7 The Game. Was that one of the best Twitter catfish jobs of all time yesterday that had us believing, or some of us for at least a hot second, that Mike Leach had been named the next head coach?
If you fell for that, I fear for your soul. My buddy David Johnson, I worked with him at the Ole Miss Spirit, and it was funny. His first response was, "I was hacked." I was like, "David, no, you weren't hacked. No, you weren't hacked. You can't. Your account didn't get hacked. No, you've been parodied, and a lot of people ate it up." But that was a good one, though, wasn't it?
I'm telling you.
They did the whole graphic and everything. That one was legit.
I think to an extent they deserved to be believed by the lunatic fringe out there, at a minimum.
Yeah, just have fun for just a moment. But Mike Leach isn't in the search, man. I mean, he's just not. Mike Norvell is obviously their number one candidate. I think that's well known at this point. They've met with Mike Norvell. They're willing to go north of $5 million to get him. But Florida State, I think, is his preferred destination from all the information I'm getting. And Florida State has now gotten desperate. They not only got turned down by James Franklin and Brian Kelly, but now Matt Campbell signed an extension with Iowa State. I think Mike Norvell is their guy, and they're not going to let him get away. And I heard, I think yesterday, that Mike Norvell had come to a tentative agreement Sunday morning with another school, not named Memphis. And if that's the case, I think it's probably Florida State. Ole Miss is still in there, and I think that they're going to give it all they can to go get him. But if it's not Mike Norvell, I think they'll quickly pivot and hire Billy Napier pretty quick. Quite frankly, I know that Billy Napier wants this job, prefers it over Arkansas and Missouri. And I'm not sure Billy Napier wouldn't be a little bit of a better fit even than Mike Norvell. Wouldn't be as sexy, but I think he'd be a good fit.
And here you are talking to our faithful listeners in the Lafayette area. He was tied, as you know, to that Mississippi State opening, which, of course, never became vacant. What in the hell happened with that? That was over quickly.
Well, I mean, Joe Moorhead, if y'all haven't figured this out by now, and it's no disrespect to I'm sure many Mississippi State listeners here, but the Egg Bowl has been proven to be the only thing that matters to Mississippi State. I mean, Mississippi State was a principal party in Ole Miss's NCAA investigative case. They cared so much about Ole Miss being brought down to a lower level that they effectively committed a murder-suicide. So it's not surprising at all that going into the Egg Bowl, everybody was saying, rumors swirling, that Joe Moorhead, win or lose, was gone. But they won the Egg Bowl. It happened in just truly remarkably dumb fashion. And for him to keep the job, not surprising. I think he goes into next year, however, his seat is on fire. I mean, the number one hot seat, I think, in the SEC. Because Derek Mason, who can gauge that hot seat at this point? I mean, who can gauge it? Will Muschamp, same thing. But, yeah, it would not be surprising, I think, in the least, for Ole Miss to end up hiring Billy Napier, who absolutely wants the job, which would be a hilarious turnabout considering that Mississippi State was positioning itself to fire Joe Moorhead and hire Billy Napier itself.
God bless the Egg Bowl. All right, so give me some of the rationale behind why
it's
that.
It's such a stupid rivalry, isn't it?
No, but it's amazing. Look, I'll tell you this. For years, LSU played Arkansas the last week of the regular season, Thanksgiving weekend, and they played for the Golden Boot, and it's the dumbest monstrosity of a trophy of all time. It's a manufactured rivalry.
The Egg Bowl. I
love the Golden Egg. Yes, I love all of it.
The Magnolia Bowl trophy is far and away the worst. It's horrible.
Okay, well, that's fair, too. But everything about the Egg Bowl.
Take it seriously, which I don't blame them. So.
Everything about the Egg Bowl is great as long as you live outside of Mississippi, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Okay.
As long as you're not here, I'm sure it's fun. Otherwise, it's miserable.
Ben, the reasons why Napier would be a good fit in Oxford.
Oh, my God. It's just recruiting territory. He could easily come in here and hit the ground running and get this class back to a respectable level and, if not, add to it. He's got a ton of guys on his staff that know the area well. If anything were to happen with Pete Golding at Alabama, he'd swoop in and try to bring him to Ole Miss. That'd be a pretty incredible pairing. I think he would hire a really good offensive coordinator, maybe like a Will Hall from Tulane, who has ties to here. He runs a really strict ship. He's from the Saban tree of coaches. I just think that there's so many boxes that Billy Napier checks. And, again, he's not the sexy name of Mike Norvell, but if Ole Miss were to be able to land him, assuming it doesn't get Mike Norvell in its pursuit of their number one candidate, Mike Norvell, I think they'd be fortunate to land him. He's done a hell of a job down there, and he's ready to take a step. He's ready to make a move. And I'm fascinated to see, though, you know, Lane Kiffin could get involved at Ole Miss if some other things happen. But Lane's 100% moving, and whether it's Arkansas or wherever, he's getting in somewhere. And Willie Fritz, I see him as a number one candidate at Missouri. So there could be a lot of interesting names, a couple from Louisiana moving in this cycle. And if Ole Miss is able to come up with Billy Napier at the end of this, it should consider itself, like I said, pretty fortunate.
Wrapping up with Ben Garrett, Ole Miss Spirit, your Rebels are going to welcome in ranked Butler for a basketball game tonight. What do you make of it?
Well, my Rebels, I cover Ole Miss. What are we talking about?
Okay, that's right. I forgot. On Twitter, they actually think you hate Ole Miss football and basketball and the university.
Right. I'm a secret anti-Ole Miss operative. Hey, and if that were the case, I've done a hell of a job, haven't I? I've done great.
Sabotage work.
I'm anti-Ole Miss. I've done great. Anyway, I'm sorry. Yeah, Butler.
Just tell me about the game, Ben.
it's an important game. This team's interesting. They're very talented, but they got seven newcomers, two veteran guards, but neither Devontae Shuler or Brian Tyree have played particularly well to start the season. And when they flashed what they can be, they've been pretty brilliant. They almost rallied from a double-digit deficit against Memphis to win, and they did rally from 21 points down against Penn State to win. But eventually putting yourself in those big holes are going to – it's going to come back to bite you. And it did against Oklahoma State. Offensively, they were just absolutely atrocious, and they lost by 41 points, which was one of the worst losses in, I think it was 13 years, maybe a little bit longer. I know it was the worst since 2006. So I don't think this team quite knows what it is yet, and they're missing Terrence Davis at the three. That's an NBA player at the three. But I think this team now is going to look totally different come league play, and if it's going to be that way, then I think it starts against Butler because it's another tough challenge. And if Ole Miss can get it and bounce back from that horrific loss to Oklahoma State, then it'll be back on the right track. But if they lose it, and how they lose it is really going to be a telling sign as well, because it's a home game. These are the kind of resume-building games that you rely on come March. And Ole Miss has already put itself in a little bit of a disadvantage as far as its two losses. So going to be interesting to watch this one. Can Brian Tyree and Devontae Shuler finally carry this team like they're supposed to, like Kermit Davis expects them to? But those are answers that have yet to be, or questions that have yet to be answered. So we'll see.
You are the man. Hey, I got to tell you, on the way out, I've had Dean Leggy and Shea Dixon on today, and you were the best of the three.
Well, I mean, I'm always going to be better than Shea. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, I love my guy, but I'm kidding. I love Shea. He's probably dropping knowledge all over the place. He's the best LSU dude outside of Ben Love and out there. I mean, what are we doing?
Check is in the mail. Ben, you know I appreciate you, man. Keep up your work as an operative out there. We'll talk soon.
All right, buddy. See you later.
He is Ben Garrett. The whole Miss Spirit. The show's had a good bit of spirit. That interview certainly did. And now we're out of time. Dean Leggy, Shea Dixon, Ben Garrett, and you all integrally involved today. We've got Tiger Rag Radio and then LSU Basketball coming up against UNO. You don't want to go anywhere. Thanks for joining us on Bumper to Bumper Sports. But the fun, it's just begun on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.